हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 9, the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Actually, the Chaitanya Charitamrita is not intended for the novice, for it is the postgraduate study of spiritual knowledge. Ideally, one begins with the Bhagavad Gita and advances through Srimad Bhagavatam to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Although all these great scriptures are on the same absolute level, for the sake of comparative study, the Chaitanya Charitamrita is considered to be on the highest platform. Every verse in it is perfectly composed. Lord Chaitanya's teachings begin from the point of surrender to Krishna. He does not pursue the paths of karma or jnana or hatha yoga, but begins at the end of material existence, at the point where one gives up material attachment. You see, so Bhagavad Gita is bringing in us through, making us aware that there is spiritual life, that there is the soul, that there is something higher, and then takes us through all the different processes of karma yoga, jnana yoga, like this. Though it's all in connection with bhakti, but it's making one aware of these things. Well, he's pointing out here in Lord Chaitanya's teachings, he's just starting with the principle of one has surrendered to Krishna, and therefore now what you will do as a surrendered devotee. Right? Because the other aspects have already been covered. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna begins his teachings by distinguishing the soul from matter, and in the 18th chapter he concludes at the point where the soul surrenders to him in devotion. The Mayavadis would have all talk cease there, but at that point the real discussion only begins. As the Vedanta Sutra says at the very beginning, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now let us begin to inquire about the Supreme Absolute Truth. Rupa Goswami thus praises Lord Chaitanya as the most munificent incarnation of all. For he gives the greatest gift by teaching the highest form of devotional service. In other words, he answers the most important inquiries that anyone can make. Do we have more of these books? Yeah, can you give one to Sri Arjuna? In other words, he answers the most important inquiries that anyone can make. Right? There are different stages of devotional service and God realization, strictly speaking. Anyone who accepts the existence of God is situated in devotional service, on page 9. To acknowledge that God is great is something, but not much. Right? So this is important because sometimes confusions come up. That, okay, there are so many living entities who accept that God is great. And they respect God, they worship God, they follow God's laws. But the point is they're respecting, but that surrender to them is only in as much as following the laws that they get benefit. Does that make sense? Karmakanda means I'm worshiping the Lord, but the whole point is I'm worshiping because of the benefits I'll get. Right? Let's say you have some work to do, so you go to the minister's office. Right? Are you going to be nice? Right. Now once you get your work done, you may never visit the guy again. Does that make sense? So there is a difference here. That's very important to note. So that's why it says that that to acknowledge that God is great is something but not much. Right? Compared to other living entities, yes, it's a good thing and will always encourage. But compared to prema, it's not much. Does that make sense? Because there isn't that surrender. So that's why he's saying, Lord Chaitanya's teachings begin from the point of surrender. For we have that surrender to Krishna, now you can begin very nicely following Lord Chaitanya's points. And before that, he already, as Krishna, has given the instructions as Kapila Muni, as in Uddhava Gita. In other words, in all the Gitas, he's already given how to surrender to the Lord. Right? And so taking that up, and you see the last instruction is Sarva Dharma Parityaja. So Lord Chaitanya is starting at that point. That's why then Chaitanya Charitamrita is considered the highest. Does that make sense? Because it's just dealing with straight, with pure devotional service. No karma, no jnana. While you see the other Gitas, they're all showing us how to connect karma and jnana to Krishna. Right? So we already have that. So why you need to read? You don't need to reinvent the wheel here. Right? Lord Chaitanya preaching as an acharya, a great teacher, taught that we can enter into a relationship with God and actually become God's friend, parent, or lover. So you see, even when Srila Prabhupada is talking, he's talking to new people, you know, that had known nothing. You see, in his lectures, you know, we've already seen two of them here, and you also see in the beginning of Gita, within a page, he's already talking about this point. He's taking you from nothing up to that point. And so smoothly, you don't even notice, you know, there's no argument. He just very nicely goes through it. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna showed Arjuna his universal form, because Arjuna was his very dear friend. Upon seeing Krishna as the Lord of the universes, however, Arjuna asked Krishna to forgive the familiarity of his friendship. Lord Chaitanya goes beyond this point. Right? Because you see in the Braj Basis that this aspect of awe and reverence can get in the way of service to Krishna. Right? It means whatever is your particular service. Because you see Arjuna has a service, but when he sees the universal form, then the problem comes up is that now he can't function in that relationship. Or we see Devaki and Vasudeva. When Krishna's born and he comes as Vishnu, then immediately they can't function in that relationship. They just offer prayers. But the Brajbasis, it's not that they don't know that he's not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's just not an important element for their relationship. Their relationship with him is a person. It's not dependent upon his position. Does that make sense? Though through Lord Chaitanya we can become friends with Krishna, and there will be no limit to this friendship. We can become friends of Krishna not in awe or adoration, but in complete freedom. Right? So that's freedom is that one's not controlled by the rules. It doesn't mean one doesn't follow, but you're not controlled by them. In other words, you're following the path of devotion. Just like let's say one has some understanding of eating. Right? And tastes. Right? So you're sitting and you're eating a meal. And in this meal, so many things you can do. Different combinations, different things like that. So what defines what you're going to do? Right? It's taste. Right? It needs a little of this, you put a little chutney, or you mix this one thing with another preparation. It's taste. In other words, there's a level of taste. And you continue that level of taste. You don't go outside of that. So, it's not that what you're doing isn't according to rules of taste. But you're not doing it because of the rules. You understand? So it's not that, okay, the rice, the dal goes with the rice. It's that you like rice with dal, that flavor. That's why you mix it. That's the meaning of freedom. This idea of, no, I don't follow any rules, I just do whatever I feel like, then, you know, it works for a few minutes, and then it kind of runs out. Yeah, so. Yeah. We can even relate to God as his father or mother. This is the philosophy not only of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but of Srimad Bhagavatam as well. There are no other scriptures in the world in which God is treated as the son of a devotee. Usually God is seen as the Almighty Father who supplies the demands of his sons. The great devotees, however, sometimes treat God as a son in their execution of devotional service. The son demands and the father and mother supply. And in supplying Krishna, the devotee becomes like a father or mother. Instead of taking from God, we give to God. It was in this relationship that Krishna's mother, Yashoda, told the Lord, "Here, eat this or you'll die." Right? Because her idea, if he doesn't eat, then he's going to die. Right? Eat nicely. In this way, Krishna, although the proprietor of everything, depends on the mercy of his devotee. This is a uniquely high level of friendship. Right? Because, yes. Yes. Yes, God. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. So the thing is this level, this point of friendship you'll see is brought up again and again. Why is that? It's a particular flavor. It's a particular mood. So when that mood of friendship is directed at Krishna, when it comes to its full form, it's called prema. But that same mood directed at the devotees is called friendship. Does that make sense? And then when you come into the material context, then there's friendship, then there's compassion, and there's indifference. Right? Indifference to those who are not interested in Krishna. Right? Compassion to those who are junior, and friendship with the others. Right? So it's all within this context of friendship. Does that make sense? And so when this becomes perverted, then it takes on the point of lust. Because then it's about that. We have relationships. Means, in other words, all the things that one does, all the external paraphernalia and relationships, are all in pursuance of lust. So what we're doing is purifying and switching that so all the paraphernalia, all the relationships are in the context of Krishna, with love, with that friendship, with that love.
Yes. So we used to say that Krishna has friendship with the, or friendly feelings towards his devotees. That's what we usually say.
Means it just depends on how, if we're defining rasas, then there's a friendship rasa. But the point is there's the aspect of friendship, because friendship means there's something common, you're interacting, you're trying to benefit each other. There's a principle there of friendship. Then it's applied specifically. The parents, then it'll take on that form. The gopis, another form. The cowherd boys. So.
The general definition of friendship is given as you always wish well for him. Ever well wisher, like Prabhupada, right?
Yes, yes.
That one, and another one is the mission is the same. Whatever the Lord's mission is, that's our mission. That
yes.
is.
Yes, because that's in the, that then in the nine processes, that's sakya.
Oh, that's
yeah. So it's that same principle. But you can see it's more advanced than the Dasya, where it's just that he's God and I serve. But there's a friendship because it's about the Lord's mission, the Lord's desire that you're trying to accomplish. Right? And you're a well-wisher. You want it to go well for Krishna. Right? Well for the devotees. But it doesn't mean that one has to be superior to be a well-wisher. It just means it's just you have that feelings. Yeah?
Maharaj?
Yes.
When you say about your taste, freedom, when you go from dasya to sakya, it's more intense?
Means in all the, as rasa is going through, means all you mean is the dasyam, sakyam, atmanivedam. Yes, it'll be more. Because the one is that there is that aspect, but that service, that mood of service in because of the superiority of Krishna, like that. But Sakyam, then it's more just the well-wishing. The Atmanivedanam, it's just you're completely surrendered at whatever Krishna likes you to do. Means that there are three kind of like, you can, sometimes you see the Acharyas have pointed out that the Dasyam will be the neophyte platform, the Sakyam would be the Madhyama platform, the preaching platform. and the Atmanivedana of the Uttama platform. Right? So these are kind of general ways of looking at it. So you have Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, which is the main thing there. Right? Then you have these attitudes of that relationship with the Lord. Right? Then there's three others where then the paraphernalia of the Lord, the worship of the Lord himself, the prayers. Okay, page 10. However, Lord Chaitanya's greatest gift was his teaching that Krishna can be treated as one's lover. In this relationship, the Lord becomes so much attached to his devotee that he expresses his inability to reciprocate. Right? Because the feelings of affection for Krishna are so great, there's nothing to reciprocate that way. There's no facilities, there's no activities, there's... It's just that the affection is so strong that all he, basically you see, he is in a mood of complete surrender. Right? Like that. And even that, just himself is not, he's just saying the wonderfulness of that surrender and the taste that the devotee gets from that surrender, that's the payment for that kind of surrender. Right? It's the grace, so Lord Chaitanya himself comes to taste that. It's so great. Right? It's so special. Krishna was so obliged to the gopis, the cowherd girls of Vrindavan, that he felt unable to return their love. Quote, I cannot repay your love. End quote. He told them, I have no more assets to give. End quote. Devotional service on the highest, most excellent platform of lover and beloved, which has never been given by any previous incarnation or acharya, was given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, Krishnadas Kaviraj, quoting Srila Rupa Goswami, writes in the fourth verse of this book, quote, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna in a yellow complexion, and he is Sachinandana, the son of Mother Sachi. He is the most charitable personality because he came to deliver Krishna prema, unalloyed love for Krishna, to everyone. May you always keep him in your hearts. It will be easy to understand Krishna through him. Yeah. So it's this aspect of this surrender of the gopis, the braja bhakti of the gopis, that has never been given. Right? Means we hear about with the Nimbarkas, then there's worship of Radha and Krishna in the Kunjas in Vrindavan, and they go into all those things. And you even see with the Shris and Madhvas, then they talk about the gopis and their relationship to Krishna and all that. Then they're comfortable with that. But this aspect of that total surrender that the gopis of Braja have, that's not been given. These other aspects you see is that there is some aspect or connection with the element of liberation that's still there, like Vaikuntha. Like that. So it's not pure, unalloyed devotion. It's pure devotion. Right? And it'll be in that form of Radha and Krishna and the sweetness of those pastimes. So it'll have that aspect of sweetness. But there's still the aspect of there's no separation. Why you wouldn't want separation?
Suffering.
So, yeah, because suffering. So we're thinking material world suffering, so separation is suffering, so I don't want separation. So who's it about here? It's about ourselves, right? But here, it's about Krishna. That means if one has that intense affection for Krishna, that one feels that separation, then that means Krishna's reciprocating that, he's tasting that. And so then that gives the most intense aspect. Yes.
When Krishna was here, he also gave it. Can we say that because he demanded surrender and Lord Chaitanya didn't, that's why...
But when you say he gave it, how did he give it?
Most personally...
He performed the pastimes,
yes.
But did he give it? Who got?
Yes.
But where are they getting that from?
Yes.
Means they've had some interest before and they've come to that. But now in what position do we see it comes to its pinnacle? Right? Means the sages at Dandakaranya, they have an interest in the conjugal relationship. Like that. So then they appear there. The Krishna is so attractive, then the demigod wives of the demigods and that, then they're interested in Krishna. Right? That's two of the groups, isn't it? The Vedas, the personified Vedas. Because they know about all this, so therefore they're interested. But how do you develop that? It just happens, or it's by association? Who are you associating with? Which devotees? And who are those highest devotees? The gopis, and of the gopis? Radharani and her group. So where's that entrance for that? Who's offering that to us? Yes. And Rupa Goswami is getting that from Lord Chaitanya. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is giving something that's never been given. We can't just take it, it's conjugal, so it's been given, or it's the park, it's Vrindavan, it's been given. So that's why it's always called Braja. Because that's different. The other Vrindavan is there, but Braja is what's needed. Does that make sense? Even in this mature world, we have a little sense of love. How is this possible? It is due to the presence of our original love for God. Whatever we find within our experience within this conditioned life is situated in the Supreme Lord, who is the ultimate source of everything. In our original relationship with the Supreme Lord, there is real love, and that love is reflected pervertedly through material conditions. Our real love is continuous and unending. But because that love is reflected pervertedly in the material world, it lacks continuity and is inebriated. If we want real transcendental love, we have to transfer our love to the supreme lovable object, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. So here you point out Krishna being everything. Everything's in contact, and the living entity's in contact at all moments with Krishna. But they're attributing that affection that they have that's coming from Krishna being, you know, the item to the external form of the item. Right? Does that make sense? That's then what is the problem. So then there is some sense of love because it's that connection with Krishna. But they're not connecting it Krishna as Bhagavan, as a person. Right? So then one will get a little bit here. And for here, it seems like a great amount. So that's why then they talk about it's an ocean of bhakti. That unlimited ocean. And it's continuous. That's the point, is that it's continuous. Our real love is continuous and unending. Well, here you'll see it'll come up and go down and this and that. The other is continuous, though there may be waves within that. But it's continuous. Well, here we'll see it'll come, it'll go, it'll do all this. In the material consciousness, we are trying to love that which is not at all lovable. We give our love to cats and dogs, running the risk that at the time of death we may think of them and consequently take birth in a family of cats or dogs. Right? So when people talk about that old lady, you know, living alone in a house with, you know, 20 cats, and she's called the cat lady, there may be more there to that name than is, you know. Our consciousness at the time of death determines our next life. This is one reason why the Vedic scriptures stress the chastity of women. If a woman is very much attached to her husband, at the time of death she will think of him. In the next life she will be promoted to a man's body. Generally, a man's life is better than a woman's because a man usually has better facilities for understanding the spiritual science. Right? That's all. It just means intellectually you can appreciate it. Right? So if that environment is there, then the women are in that environment, it makes it very easy for them to work in that. As we mentioned before, that the feminine mentality will be that of working with attachment. So it can be attachment to Krishna, but it could also be attachment to Maya. So the men's mentality means you can tell the difference between the two. And so you have that spiritual aspect in the middle. So then, that's why it says, spiritual husband, religious wife. So that religious wife can be sad dharma, and devoted to Krishna. And then it's so much, in that way, it's so much easier for the women. But if it's not, and it swings the other way, then it'll be more difficult. So then that's why the balance is there. This. So this is that. So now if you cultivate Krishna consciousness, you think of Krishna. Right? So the idea in the Vedic is to bring everyone to the point of Krishna consciousness, you put him in the best situation. So the best will be to remember Krishna and just go back to Godhead. But if not, you avoid doing things that you'll end up taking birth in the animal species. Right? So that you can continue in human life. Does that make sense? So the Vedas is always trying to create the best opportunity. But Krishna consciousness is so nice that it makes no distinction between man and woman. In Bhagavad Gita 9:32, Lord Krishna says, anyone who takes shelter of me, whether a woman, Shudra, Vaishya, or anyone else of low birth, is sure to achieve my association. This is Krishna's guarantee. Yes?
Is religious not spiritual?
It can be. Religious means following the appropriate activity and understanding for a particular item or situation or activity. You know, just like, let's say, cooking. You follow the rules of that, then that's the religion of cooking. But now, the thing is then seeing that in the context of Krishna, now it takes on the transcendental religion. But otherwise, someone can be a good cook and following the religion of cooking, but it's not. So when we connect it to Krishna, now that becomes, then it's spiritual. Same with everything else. The house, one follows the activities of dealing with the family, and so one's following the religion of that. Now if that's done in context of Krishna, then it's sadharma, it's spiritual. But if it's not, it won't be. But in the Vedas, the whole idea is that all these religious activities are actually meant for serving Krishna. They're not meant for anything else. But the living entity has come to the material world because they're not interested in Krishna. And so, it's not that they're not interested in all the religious activities and their results. They're not interested in those religious activities and results connected to Krishna. Therefore, the living entity comes here, and in the more pure states, the perversion is just the mentality, but the form is not. So therefore you see the Vedic culture, and they follow all the different activities that you see in the spiritual world. So when Krishna comes and performs his activities in Dwarka and Vrindavan, they look the same as everybody else does, what the Vedas do. But they're doing all those rules to please Krishna. So then, that's the whole point, is that at least, okay, minimum, the recommendation is everybody's religious. Because then, let's say someone is following all the Vedic recommendations, when they take up devotional service, it'll be easy for them. Now they do the same thing. Their life doesn't change. All they do is add Krishna. But if one is from a background of irreligion, then the problem comes up is you add Krishna, but you're adding it to a system that's not actually that favorable for using for Krishna. So then by purification and all this, and so it's more difficult. So that's the whole thing, is that the basically you could say is that the environment will be set by the masculine influence. But what happens in that environment, that would be the feminine influence. Right? So, therefore, if the feminine nature is religious, then it will always be of a good standard. And then, if on here, it's like he's pointing out, Krishna conscious, it doesn't make a distinction. Anyone can be Krishna conscious, because everyone's the soul. And so, then it's perfect. But if not, let's say you have a nice Hindu family doing all the things nicely. Prabhupada said they're better situated than someone in the West who's, you know, is monotheistic. But they don't have any lifestyle or anything that's connected to God, really. For this Hindu person, he, you know, so many demigods, you name it, they're on their altar. But all you have to do is add Krishna and bingo, they're following everything necessary for devotional service. Well, the other person, you add Krishna and that understanding, now they have to add the religious process. And that's hard. So that's why then the children, they learn from the mother the religious process. That's why in the Vedas you see they're always so careful about the nature of the girl, because that's going to be the level of religiousness in the family. So if she's on that, it'll work. Okay. So it's a science. So it's very important. And as we see is that the science is there, so it has its mechanics, but the glory of is that it's not bound by these material considerations. Right? The social things to work nicely depends on you follow the religious elements. And so, but being Krishna conscious, you just have to be conscious of Krishna. Then that religious environment is the natural form that devotees in the spiritual world use. So that's why you prefer to use it. But you can be Krishna conscious even if there isn't. You know, you're sitting in the bus stand and nobody there is devotees. You can still be Krishna conscious. But if you were sitting in a temple, it just makes it so much easier. Is that okay? Lord Krishna says, anyone who takes shelter of me, okay, this is Krishna's guarantee. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu informs us that in every country and in every scripture, there is some hint of love of Godhead. Right? So that's the point, is we're talking about, there's always a hint of it. And there are always, as mentioned before, what was the point we started with? To acknowledge that God is great is something, but not much. So all these different scriptures of the world are all going to point that out. That's basically, they have to accept that too, just as the bottom platform. But they do hint at love of Godhead. That's why if you talk about it, then those of you know, following other scriptures will understand what you're talking about, at least in the concept of it. They may not understand in detail. But it's not necessarily the thrust. And so, if they have surrendered in that mood of devotion, then that will take on one flavor. But if not, it'll take on the flavor of karma, jnana, whatever they're following. But no one knows what love of Godhead actually is. They've heard about it, but they don't know what it is or how to get it. The Vedic scriptures, however, are different in that they can direct the individual in the proper way to love God. Other scriptures do not give information on how one can love God. Right? They just say you should love God. Right? They don't say how. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. And nor do they actually define or describe what or who the Godhead actually is. Although they officially promote love of God, they have no idea how to execute it. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives a practical demonstration of how to love God in a conjugal relationship. Taking the part of Srimati Radharani, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tried to love Krishna as Radharani loved him. Krishna was always amazed by Radharani's love. Quote, how does Radharani give me such pleasure? He would ask. In order to study Radharani, Krishna lived in her role and tried to understand himself. This is the secret of Lord Chaitanya's incarnation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, but he has taken the mood and role of Radharani to show us how to love Krishna. Thus, the author writes in the fifth verse, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord, who is absorbed in Radharani's thoughts. Okay. So this is how we understand it's never been given before. Because we don't see, means Advaitacharya, he is the incarnation of the Lord. So we have so many incarnations. The Swamsa avatars is unlimited. But he makes the point, unless they surrender, how do you reciprocate? Right? They don't surrender in devotion, he can't reciprocate in that position. But here, taking this mood of Radharani, then being the Sarup Shakti, then she can engage everyone in Krishna's service. It doesn't need Krishna to, it doesn't need that, how do you say, the devotees, by their blessings, then it becomes revealed. So Krishna's mercy follows the mercy of the devotees. That's why the first offense is don't blaspheme the devotees, because we want Krishna's mercy, but the mercy is following the devotees. The devotee wants to you to have the mercy. That's how you get it. That's why it said, by the grace of the spiritual master, then all these things are revealed. Right? So by the association of devotees, that's how we get this. Is that? Yeah. This brings up the question of who Srimati Radharani is and what Radha Krishna is. Right? So Prabhupada just so nicely takes it through, establishes these points. And there's that, okay, so now this brings up who's Radharani. So he's already introduced about Radha, that about conjugal pastimes, but it's generic. You understand? We were talking before about the Shravana Dasa means the generic understanding and appreciation. So already there's so much you can do there. Then it starts to become specific. Okay? Actually, Radha Krishna is the exchange of love, but not ordinary love. Krishna has immense potencies, of which three are principal: the internal, the external, and the marginal potencies. In the internal potency, there are three divisions: Samvit, Ladini, and Sandini. The Ladini potency is Krishna's pleasure potency. All living entities have this pleasure-seeking potency, for all beings are trying to have pleasure. This is the very nature of the living entity. At present, we are trying to enjoy our pleasure potency by means of the body in the material condition. By bodily contact, we are attempting to derive pleasure from material sense objects. But we should not entertain the nonsensical idea that Krishna, who is always spiritual, also tries to seek pleasure on this material place, on this material plane. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the material universe as a non-permanent place full of miseries. Why then would he seek pleasure in matter? He is the Supersoul, the Supreme Spirit, and his pleasure is beyond the material conception. Now remember in the 11th canto, Krishna points out, as soon as you have material desire, misery is born with that desire. Right? Fraternal twins? Right? They go together. Because on the material platform, pleasure means removal of pain. So if there's no pain, how will there be pleasure, right? No pain, no gain, right? You know, so it goes a lot broader than just exercise, right? You know, if you don't feel the pain of hunger, you can't appreciate eating, right? Does that make sense? So it's already there. That's why then Krishna's not interested in this kind of pleasure. It's what you can go for it, but it means to have it, you have to have the pain. That's just the way it works. Right? To learn how, he's the Supreme Spirit and his pleasure beyond the material conception. Like I said before, Radha and Krishna is the exchange of love. Not that they are exchanging love. They are the exchange of love. And everything else is then expanding from that. Okay? Yeah. To learn how Krishna enjoys pleasure, we must study the first 9 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, and then we should study the 10th canto, in which Krishna's pleasure potency is displayed in his pastimes with Radharani and the damsels of Raja. Unfortunately, unintelligent people turn at once to the sports of Krishna in the Dasama Skanda, the 10th canto. Krishna is embracing Radharani or is dancing with the cowherd girls in the Rasa dance are generally not understood by ordinary men, because they consider these pastimes in the light of mundane lust. They foolishly think that Krishna is like themselves and that he embraces the gopis just as an ordinary man embraces a young girl. Some people thus become interested in Krishna because they think that this religion allows indulgence in sex. This is not Krishna bhakti, love of Krishna, but prakriti sahajya, materialistic lust. Right? Because they engage themselves in this way, as we were discussing before, and they think that this is spiritual. But it's just they're engaging their lust and just using a context of Radha and Krishna. You understand? But, as it pointed out, this aspect, Krishna's doing this only in Braj. Right? In Dwarka, it's that only Rukmini he embraces. All the other queens don't get embraced by Krishna. He's there, he's intimate, the nice relationships and interaction, husband and wife, but he never embraces them. But in Braja, then you see that's very constant with all the gopis, specifically Radharani. So then it's a different platform. So if they're taking on that this aspect of mundane lust, they're not dealing with Radha and Krishna. They'll be dealing down on a lower level. Basically, technically, they're dealing with Shiva and Parvati. But, you know. Yes?
Yesterday you mentioned that Radharani is the only one who can perfectly satisfy Krishna.
Yes.
But what is the difference of surrender between the gopis and Radharani?
The gopis. Yes. Means that means other means of the 108 or like this. Yes. Means, well, Radharani is the complete Sarup Shakti. So all means Krishna is the complete personality of Godhead. So when he expands for a particular function. So those qualities of himself required for that pastime, that's then what he manifests. Like in the Sringadeva, he'll manifest that anger and you know, and then paraphernalia and situations that go along with that. And so then the pastime will be perfect. It's Krishna, but he's only manifesting how much qualities and activities are needed for the purpose of that incarnation. So in the same way, Srimati Radharani, she being the complete personality of his internal potency, his Sarup Shakti, therefore every quality that Krishna has, every desire, every interest, every action, everything, she is the energy that accomplishes that. That's why it said only she can please Krishna. Right? Now, just as Krishna expands, she expands. So in all the expansions of Krishna, she has a counterpart to that. So it matches perfectly with that expansion. But at the same time, it doesn't have that same flavor that will give that full pleasure to Krishna. So now when we're expanding here, then she having all these, then there's all these different aspects that are there, and different gopis will have different qualities of her in certain proportions and things like that. So then it will simply bring up situations, you could say, that let's say that competitive spirit is there, right? Because the aspect, if you say that Rupa Goswami then defines the feminine nature, the generic, as having contrariness, elusiveness, and shyness. That'll just be generic. Then there'll be the uniqueness of everyone. So now that contrariness then shows that there's the element of competitiveness or chivalry or these kind of aspects like that. So now, to bring out this flavor and taste, other gopis are having this. So then it makes it special, right? So then when we're dealing with the other, you could say the rival gopis, then if Radha and Krishna are always together, it doesn't have as strong a parakeya flavor as if they can't always be together. Like in Dwarka, Krishna can be with the queens. It means there isn't someone else to be with. So, but in Vrindavan, then you don't have as much of that parakeya aspect. Because if Radha and Krishna are always together, that's why in the sampradayas where Radha and Krishna worship, even though it's on the platform of spontaneous devotional service, it's still Radha and Krishna are always together. There's no separation. They even have names for the kunjas that they're in. Because they're always in the same, you know, kind of environment. So they go from this one to that one and all that. I've never come across that we have names for the all the kunjas. There'll be certain places, Govindastali and certain things like that. The trees might have, and they're specific, but it doesn't go to the point where it has all that. So you see is that there is kind of a grandeur slightly there in that. And so without it, it's not as parakeya as in Braj. So Braj is full parakeya, because Krishna could be with, you know, you take 108, those are made, then there's 16,000. Those are the ones that are we can mention. It's actually millions. Right? And so then, by that, then you have to make an endeavor to have Radha and Krishna together. Right? And so, by that, they are actually supporting Radha Krishna's pastimes. And then you add to that the flavor of Jatila, Kotila, and Abhimanyu. And so then they also throw a spanner into the works. It also makes it more difficult. And so then, like this, unlimitedly you can go on. That's outside the group. Within the group, it means that Radharani can bring all these multi-facets of pleasure to Krishna. But now in this, then she is also just taking the position of the Hladini Shakti. Even though she's the Sarup Shakti, she's not technically taking that position. So now you need environments, you need moods, you need paraphernalia, you need activities, you need results, all those things. So just as Krishna is just enjoying, and he's expanded Balaram for all that, Radharani, she is also just enjoying with Krishna as it is. They are the exchange of love. Then her expansions, they're taking care of all these things. But in perfect line with her. So she has this, she wants to offer that service to Krishna. There's a devotee, a gopi there that will bring that aspect out. And then the two of them can enjoy that. It's her arrangement. You know, it's Krishna's desire. But then it's done so different devotees. That's why you see is that when it explains a devotee, it'll say what their particular service is. Now we see is the gopis, they do all the range of services. But there's something that's specifically theirs that they excel in. So when they bring that out, that will add a particular thing to the pastime. Otherwise, then they're, yes, it means you're sweeping the sands at on the Jamuna, you know, for the Rasa dance. Means you're going to have 5,000 or 6,000 maidservants are going to be doing that. Because the whole idea is pastimes to move fast, right? You know, the feminine nature is yesterday. So you have something going on now, and that will have its taste for something. Then it has to have variety. So basically, you could say every 20 minutes, the pastime changes, adjusts. Like that. Because you can do one kind of thing and pursue it for 20 minutes, then it has to morph into something else. So basically, from when everybody lands at Govindastali, there's going to be 20 minutes of one pastime. You basically have, unless that goes into two. You know, one, you have the aspect of them coming together, but then you have the point of them being together. Then you also have when Lalita, having arranged everything, because she immediately goes off to arrange things. Then when she comes back, then you know, everything's ready. So she's come back for that. And she's expected Radha and Krishna have been together. And so then being together, that will have symptoms. But in that pastime, then we see that the acharyas arrange, you know, knowing that this is how Radharani will like it, that they go and get new flowers, new everything like that, so that before Lalita comes back, they've already redressed her. So she looks as if she hasn't spent any time with Krishna. So then she's shocked. And that shock of her then is pleasing to Radharani and Krishna and the others, because they all know, and she doesn't know. You understand? So like that, the just bringing out the various the various details of the pastime. And so all the gopis that are there means Radharani's group. They all, you could say, with amongst them, they'll have all the qualities, you know, amongst themselves that Radharani would have to manifest all the things to support that. It means, in other words, she has all the nature herself to enjoy that. But then the arrangement of that, an experience depends on a result. A result depends on an action. An action depends on knowledge and skills. So that means that those aspects, other than the experience, that is all given to all the other gopis. They arrange everything, but because they're so in tune with Radharani, when she experiences it, they experience it. Perfect. Yeah, okay. Because Krishna is the center, then it works perfectly. Okay. So, yeah. But okay, that wasn't. No, bit of a Warsaw moment there. No. What happened? Okay. Okay, to avoid such errors, right, means of the Prakriti Sahajiyas and seeing it on the mundane platform. Because as we see, as what we're discussing here, it's not about the forms and all that are just in support of the affection for Krishna. It's not that. It's the food that makes the pleasure. Right? For us, the food itself, we taste the food, we like the taste, and that's what, but here it's because of the arrangement and devotion. It's the devotion that is pleasing. And it's given through a pleasing medium. Right? In this case, food. Right? Does that make sense? Or they may be by fanning, by putting them on a swing, by, you know, the dancing. By, so these are just mediums to express the devotion. So that's the whole thing. That's the specialness of Braj. It's just about that. It doesn't mean the secondary forms are there, but the focus is not on that. But at the same time, it's because they're so so perfectly blended. They do those activities better than anyone else. Right? Lakshmiji would like to be able to come and render that kind of service. Right? But she can't. Why? Because her idea, why does she want? Because I mean, she understands Krishna, you know, is that is special and that moods and all that. She can appreciate it. But who means Krishna being performing the activities with the gopis? Okay? And that interaction is so special and so sweet that Lakshmiji wants to take part in that, to experience that. Okay? But who, in Lakshmi's mind, who is that Krishna that she wants to interact with? Her husband. So she can't enter the pastimes. That's why it says Lakshmi cannot enter, because she thinks Krishna is her husband. Right? Does that make sense? So, she can get as close as Dwarka. But that's it. She can't enter Vrindavan because she won't give up that he's her husband, because that's who she is. Right? So that's an expansion of Radharani. Yes?
Sometimes devotees are bewildered by this particular incident with Lakshmi, and they say that she wasn't satisfied completely in her relationships. That's why she wanted to change.
But why just would they? But why would they say that?
Just to find their idea, you know, that we can we change our swarup and all these things.
Yeah, but the thing is in the material world, as we said, because there's pain, then our pleasure comes in removal of the pain. So then one of the things is the option, you know, those freedom of options and freedom like this. So that we don't, the idea is, oh, we don't have options. But the point is why do you need options? You know, it's just like, let's say, you're under the water, right? And you're running out of air, okay? Now, when you come up to the surface and you want to breathe in, what do you expect to be there above the water? Air. What about nitrogen or methane or, you know, so many things could be there. There are so many options in the way of gases. Why are we limiting ourselves to simply just air? You know, saying air is perfect. Why do you need anything else? So that's the whole thing, is that there's this idea of that this freedom is actually a thing, but they don't understand freedom is not being bound by rules. Because here is the rule, I want to have options. But that's their rule. But here's, you're going beyond that. You don't need options. It's already perfect. Because you're following a taste. You're not following rules. So that's why it won't be understood. It can't be understood. Because they're still seeing it in the context of rules. Braja Bhakti can't be seen like that. We can allude to it. Right? In other words, they'll tell the process, but they don't tell what the taste is. Are they defining the taste? Other than saying it's better than anything else. But you can't be described. Right? Is that what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. It's they can only show you how it's done, and by that association, then Krishna will reveal, Krishna being pleased. Couldn't take the risk.
Yeah, the gopis would take the risk. They need their husbands and
Yes. Yes, nice. Yeah, because she's the lord of opulence, so she can't leave that. Well, they're leaving everything behind. Because all those things, because if it doesn't work out, what do you have? Nothing, right? If the woman goes out of the house to meet Krishna, and it doesn't work out, then what does she come back to? Right? Nothing, right? So Lakshmiji can't take that risk. Being the goddess of fortune. So that's her identity. But for the gopis, it's just the servants of Krishna, the maid servants. That's their only identity. So all the other things, they just add to it. So that is Parakiya, because they have families and husbands and all that. It is Parakiya because, you know, then with endeavor they get out and all that. Otherwise, it was just so easy, then it wouldn't work. But it's all these things add to the flavor because they're doing this eternally. And every day, because Krishna is unlimited, the energy is unlimited, therefore the variety that's there is unlimited. It's not gross, it's subtle. It's just the subtlety of how they got out today, or how this and that, and the little aspects, and where. Okay. So, yeah, that's a very good point. She can't take this. Yes.
Srimad Bhagavatam, when we studied, we saw that Vishuddhev Goswami, he never mentioned about Radharani directly.
They don't mention about Radharani directly. In Bhagavatam, no.
Yeah. So, before Bhagavatam, C.C. Chaitanya Charitamrita brings us discussing Rama and Krishna. Greater details so that we can understand and appreciate them.
So, what's the question?
The question is that Chaitanya Charitamrita is giving at a study.
Is giving that.
Yeah, so because Bhagavatam did not mention about Radharani, therefore CC is giving that mention. Is it so?
Is it true?
Is
it true that Bhagavatam didn't mention? Does mention, but not directly. Right. So there, because the acharyas point out that see Sukadeva Goswami, then if he talks about Radharani, since he's Radharani's parrot, he might go into ecstasy. And going into ecstasy, you don't know how long he'll be in ecstasy. So Parikshit Maharaj has limited time. So he has to bring him to, you know, that full position of Krishna consciousness before he, you know, within that time. So that's why he doesn't mention Radharani directly. Those who understand the quality, who they are, when he goes through and mentions one gopi did this, another gopi did that, they can say who they're talking about. They can give actual names. Like that. So you can tell who they're talking about, but he doesn't mention it directly. So those who know will know, and those who don't, it doesn't. The other aspect that's given is that it is a... It's you can say, the grandest assembly of sages in the universe. So that means everybody from all range of saintliness is there. And so many of them wouldn't be able to appreciate or understand about Braja Bhakti. And so then you don't give so much detail. They can appreciate the general principle of that surrender. That they'll all catch. But the detail of that, then they don't give. And so that's the secondary. Right? And then the more important is just the timing. So you can't afford to risk that. And Chaitanya Charitamrita, then it's given there. So the Lord has a plan. Because when Krishna comes as Swayam Ramachandra, he comes as Swayam Krishna, he comes as Swayam Chaitanya. Right? So it's going to be revealed. So it's not a problem. Right? Yes.
Can you explain a little more about the relation between freedom and taste?
Freedom and taste. Freedom just means supposedly no obstacles. But the point that, so that's all it is. It's not it's the taste of not having any obstacles. You know, for getting taste. But taste means it's actually a direct perception of something. Does that make sense? So when Prabhupada was talking about the devotees, they actually have freedom because they're not bound by the rules. There's no restriction. Right? It's not that because the rule there they have to do this. It's because that's where the taste is, they follow that. So that's unrestricted. Because we have to understand it's a mentality. The other is, no, here's the rule, you have to do this. And they're doing that to please the Lord, so it's devotion. But then when we're talking about Raga Muga Bhakti, it means it's about the taste that's being gained. That's what we're saying. It has the sadhana in that you're practicing Vaidhi sadhana as a neophyte. But the remembrance, you're remembering about Krishna and specifically in the realms or the devotees and pastimes that one has that inclination towards. Right? So it's by taste. So because of that, Raga Muga Bhakti is not something that I do the ritual, therefore I get the result, because then that's karma. Right? So it's a matter of taste. You don't have the taste, it doesn't work. It's not, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like someone who appreciates good food, they're not eating because of the rules, they're eating because they appreciate the food. Well, say someone doesn't, they eat because that's the time to eat. And if you don't eat at that time, then it's bad for your health. So, for one person, the rules just maintain their health. For the other person, it's an opportunity for taste. Though, the form of it externally looks exactly the same. So that's the difficulty, is that somehow or another we take it as secondary. And so Rag Bhakti must be also secondary. And then we see, then the problem comes up as people think Krishna and his pastimes of the gopis are secondary. So that's why then one must be very careful. Is that? Yeah.
Like, in that point that the devotee is having the freedom, like Chanakya Pandit mentions that Ati Sarvatra Varje means excess of anything is bad.
But
excess of doing anything is bad. So his point is, even he performs all the devotional activities also as per like how much you have to do. But for devotees, it's like excess of devotional service is never bad. Because
it's never
they're
bad.
Driven by this. Like, yeah. Sometimes we hear Goswamis don't even sleep at night. They're absorbed. That is never seen in.
Yes, never seen elsewhere. Because otherwise, I mean, just one thing, how could there be too much freedom? Just think of an excess of freedom. How did that work out for a Robespierre? Right? Because freedom is there, and now you don't have to follow the rules of the land, and so the people cut off his head also. That's an excess of freedom.
Just
the taste of going crazy, right? Yeah, so that's the thing. It's the same principle, but now it's being applied towards Krishna, so it's actually transcendental. Because the other one will give misery. You follow the mundane taste, it will give you misery. But you follow the spiritual taste, it'll never give you misery. So, good? Balance means it's an expansion. It means Radharani is expanded as Chandravali. And Chandravali is then expanded there as Rukmini. And then that's expanded as Lakshmi. Okay? So you'll get that kind of aspect. So it just means that just as Krishna Swamsa means that the expansion has less qualities than who they've expanded from. Otherwise, what's the need of the expansion? Right? Then it would be another. I mean, the incarnation would be another aspect. So then like Krishna and Balaram, potency is the same, but just there's a flavor difference. So Krishna's Kriya is Icha, and Balaram takes Kriya and Jnana. Right? But then to make the Jnana work nicely, that's the expanse as Mahanarayana. Does that make sense? So that's the same, it's the same principle that comes down. So that will be there. And we'll see as it comes up. See. Okay? To avoid such errors, we should understand what Radha Krishna actually is. Radha and Krishna display their pastimes through Krishna's internal energy. The pleasure potency of Krishna's internal energy is the most difficult subject matter. And unless one understands what Krishna is, one cannot understand it. Right? Because you have to know Krishna to be able to appreciate it. Krishna does not take any pleasure in this material world, but he has a pleasure potency. Because we are part and parcel of Krishna, the pleasure potency is within us also. But we are trying to exhibit that pleasure potency in matter. Krishna, however, does not make such a vain attempt. The object of Krishna's pleasure potency is Radharani. Krishna exhibits his potency as Radharani and then engages in loving affairs with her. In other words, Krishna does not take pleasure in this external energy but exhibits his internal energy. Right? Because it's about that, the mood, the affection. The external energy means it's about the external, the forms. That's the prominent. Right? Our taste here is in the forms that we get. In the spiritual world, it's about the relationship with Krishna. You use forms. Does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say, for example, in music, someone's very good in music, and they're absorbed in the music, and they're just playing music, so they're improvising. So what are they going to do? They're going to follow that path of where that taste in that in the music that they're feeling now is going. What notes, what kind of expressions, all that they're going to be following. Right? Does that make sense? And if they go outside of that, it won't match. Does that make sense? So, that principle is there, but it's about that these things are making it happen. So the external things, they're playing the music, then they're getting the taste. The spiritual is the other way around. The taste is there, and then there's the forms to use. Does that make sense? So it switches, which is prominent. So, because if we think that the forms are what's making the taste, that immediately is material consciousness. That's what's meant by seeing the other side of Viraja. Right? It means the same activity is there. One's in the house. But for the gopis, it's just the house gives them an identity there in Braj, in the social system, that now, from that, they can engage in activities. Right? Means if they're a young girl, they're unmarried, they have to be moving around with the parents. And parental ras and conjugal ras really don't go together. But if they're married, now all the married gopis can move around together. Right? Why would they want to move around together? Because they'll talk about Krishna and things like that. And you can do more in a group for Krishna than you can on your own. Right? So then, therefore, girls move around in groups. Does that make sense? So that's where it comes from. Is because the taste in Krishna consciousness. Here it'll be the taste in just whatever is the topic. Does that make sense? So now they can move around Vrindavan. They can go to Mother Jashoda's house. They can go out with her to see Krishna off. They can do all these things. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. That gives them that freedom to be in that position. So for them, the household like gives that opportunity for serving Krishna. Some sense. Yes.
So, Jiva Goswami, before describing about what are the functions of internal potency, first he establishes that Krishna can have mutually contradictory shaktis which can perform mutually contradictory functions. Because what we observe, like here Prabhupada says that it is most difficult subject matter to understand that about internal potency, because what we experience is in general completely opposite in the material world.
Yes. So yes. And also here is that we're trying to arrange things so that they're straightforward. Mm-hmm. And by being straightforward, why do we want it straightforward? It's more simple. It's less trouble. Right? And why would we be worried about trouble? Because of the mode of ignorance. You know, if we could do nothing and only enjoy, we'd do that. You know, if you could just sit on the couch all day and watch television and do nothing else, and all the bills would be paid, you'd also get fabulous prasad. Everything would work. That's all people would do. right? So that's the so here it's seen as a problem, but there Krishna is everything. He is the supreme. There is no knowledge that is not him. There is no skill that's not him. There is no activity or result that's not him. Right? So then having these contradictory things, you get more taste. Right? Let us say, okay, I have just some sugar. You eat it. Okay, it's a taste. It's okay. And I have, let's say, just some lemon. And you taste that, it's okay. Okay? But now you put the two together into lemonade, now it gives a taste that neither one of them on their own could give. So it's a contradiction. So if you look at things, most everything that we call there's a contradiction. You know, as we mentioned before, that the rich man, that the poor person or less fortunate thinks that he's enjoying, that's his pleasure. So, but you have to have the rich and the poor. If it's just rich, then, you know, then it's a matter of who's richer. Because no matter how rich you are, there's somebody who's richer. You know what I'm saying? So that's the contradiction is where the flavor comes. Like we said, if you're not tired, then sleep doesn't have any meaning. Right? You know, if you're not running around like a madman, then sitting down for a peaceful moment doesn't have any meaning. So that's the thing, it's always in these opposites. If it's not cold, you don't appreciate warm. Like let's say there's a temperature. Right? Now, if it's cold out, that temperature we'll call warm and pleasant. But if it's not cold out, we'll call that warm temperature too hot. Right? Now, let's say it's hot, we have a cool temperature. Like, let's say, the AC, right, the lowest setting, 16. We're happy with that. But if it was 16 degrees outside, we'd say it's freezing. Does that make sense? Yes. And if you have an AC that does heating, the highest it'll go generally is 28 or 30. Right? But if it's not cold and it's just 30 degrees, we'll say it's hot. So that's the whole thing, the contradictions are where the flavor taste is. Does that make sense? So the highest taste then is where these greatest contradictions can be there. So out of reverence, there's minimal contradictions. There's the greatest and then the servants. Like, so you do have that, and the bigger you see it, the more you hear, then, you know, it gives more of a flavor, the more the grandeur. But there you can put together all these elements that are totally contradictory, and it works. You know? So that's the flavor. That can be done eternally. Because the subtlety that's there within that. So you have all these little formulas, and all of them are being operated. And so, just like with music, you have seven notes, you can get unlimited melodies out of it. That's just that. Then you have the beats. And then you can get out of that. So, like this, you can get all these, you put them all together, you have unlimited pastimes. So each one adds their specific thing to it. So, anything else? Yes.
Philosophy. We said that the material world, that relativity is there.
When you say our philosophy,
whatever
we say, and who are we?
Material world is relative.
Material world. We are the world. Yes, I've heard that one before. I say. My compatriots of youth used to say that. Well, actually, they were older than me, so. You were saying?
That the contradiction you were talking about, that unless that there is a poor man, that richness cannot be appreciated. In that sense, that relativity, because of relativity, because it's not there, that's not accepted. I have heard that this is a duality or a relative world.
Yes.
But spiritual world is not a relative, it's absolute.
Yes, that's why, because they're all connected to Krishna. Here they're not, that's why it's dual. Dual because you see, you see the item of the material world as separate from Krishna. That's duality. Krishna's non-dual, it's all Him. So in the spiritual world, these are all His energies. But we were talking about taste. Right? If you want to go into the philosophical thing, that's a different point. But we're talking about taste. Taste comes because there's differences. Does that make sense? Yeah. In other words, Krishna does not take pleasure in His external energy, but exhibits His internal energy, His pleasure potency, as Radharani, and then enjoys with her. Thus, Krishna manifests Himself as Radharani in order to enjoy His internal pleasure potency. Of the many extensions, expansion, and incarnation of the Lord, this pleasure potency is the foremost and chief. Right? So she's the chief, actually, because that's where He then enjoys His pastimes. Right? So technically, He's not different from His energy, so He's expanding as Radharani, and then He's enjoying with Radharani. Right? But because He is individually sentient, therefore all the expansions from Him are also individually sentient. But at the same time, as they all understand their relationship with Krishna. Does that make sense? Like Balaram is Krishna, but Balaram also, because of the mood difference, he identifies as a servant of Krishna. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. It is.
You said that when you said yes, that Krishna, when you said just as Radharani, mother to a very internal pleasure potency. Can you say that this is because Radha Krishna is like a divine couple? They can together, same time, Krishna and his energy.
Yes, they're always together, because the point is his internal potency, as mentioned before, is Samvit Sandini Hladini. But then the pleasure aspect is Hladini. So Radharani is the manifestation of the Hladini. She is the Sarup Shakti, just like He is the complete personality of Godhead. So it means all aspects are within Him. But the point is to experience the happiness in that, he just takes that mood of Braja Krishna, and she, and then expands himself as Srimati Radharani with the Hladini. So therefore, of the internal potency, then the Samvit and Sandini aspects are taken care of by others. Just as for him, the Kriya and Jnana are taken care of by others. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the Icha is the thing. So the Icha and the Hladini, that's where the pairing is. So then that's because the point is that's the highest aspect. Then these other aspects are expanded. That's uniqueness. So Krishna as everything, this is the best. So that's the mood he takes. And because he's everything, he expands himself as everything else to support him as the enjoyer. Does that make sense? Because we're taking it that the grandeur is the greatest. But no, it's the guy's big, he's rich, he's powerful and all that, so we'll be in reverence of that, and that's the greatest thing. But actually when he goes inside the house and just sits with family and friends and that's actually the pleasure for him. You know what I'm saying? And so, the difference is here, he has to do all those things himself. Krishna can sit in the house all day, and his expansion can go to work. Right? Does that make sense? So Vishnu is Krishna at the office. He can just stay at home all day. that in a sense? It is not that Radharani is separate from Krishna. Radharani is also Krishna. But there is no difference between the... For there is no difference between the energy and energetic. Without energy, there is no meaning to the energetic. And without the energetic, there is no energy. Similarly, without Radha, there is no meaning to Krishna. And without Krishna, there is no meaning to Radha. Because of this, the Vaishnava philosophy first of all pays obeisances to and worships the internal pleasure potency of the Supreme Lord. Thus the Lord and His potency are always referred to as Radha Krishna. Similarly, those who worship Narayan first of all utter the name of Lakshmi as Lakshmi Narayana. Similarly, those who worship Lord Rama first of all utter the name of Sita. In any case, Sita Ram, Radha Krishna, Lakshmi Narayana, the potency always comes first. Because that's our approach too, because we're expanding from that potency. Right? In other words, the Haladini is there, but the expansion of the Haladini is the Sambit. We're an expansion of Sambit. So that's why we see in the grammar when you have the verb, because the verb is that where the subject and object meet, right? So, but we're not the Sambit potency. We're an expansion of that. So therefore, we're instrumental. Right? Means you have the verb. We are assisting the activity between the two. So just by grammar, that defines what the jiva is. Right? It's in between. Right? So when you see the two together, that's then when it works nicely. But if we don't see that together, we just see the controller and enjoyer and think, I am that. You know? Tatsvamasi. Then we have a problem. Right? Yeah. Radha and Krishna are one. And when Krishna desires to enjoy pleasure, he manifests himself as Radharani. The spiritual exchange of love between Radha and Krishna is the actual display of Krishna's internal pleasure potency. Although we speak of when Krishna desires, just when he did desire, we cannot say. Yes. Because there's so many of the same word. Right? We only speak in this way because in conditioned life, we take it that everything has a beginning. However, in spiritual life, everything is absolute. And so there's neither beginning nor end. So in pastimes, that's why you have the Boma Lila. Because in the Boma Lila, you can give a beginning to everything. Even though there isn't. Right? He gets Sudarshan Chakra from here. He gets his conch shell from there. You know, all these different things. There's a beginning. And so then that will be used within the pastimes. But ultimately, there is no beginning. It's Krishna. So when is that you can't say. It's just is always existent. That's why Krishna tells about the souls. We've always existed. Right? It's not a matter of we're created at any time. We always exist. Right? But he has unlimited energies and he is expanding unlimited. So at some point we may expand. But we always existed. Right? And when we're talking about unlimited, there's no time, so there's no use trying to find that point either. You know? Does that make sense? You know, Thursday afternoon at 4:07. No, doesn't work. Yet, in order to understand that Radha and Krishna are one, and that they also become divided, the question, when, automatically comes to mind. When Krishna desired to enjoy the pleasure potency, he manifested himself in the separate form of Radharani. And when he wanted to understand himself through the agency of Radha, he united with Radha, and that unification is called Lord Chaitanya. This is all explained by Srila Krishna's Kaviraj in the fifth verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Right, so all these very nice fine points, and he's only gotten out to the fifth. Like that. So let's see, is that, you know, we're spending, this is how much? Chapters 1 to 4. So yeah, so all this is just dealing with the fourth chapter is dealing with this point.
Four verses.
Are in here. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, so. So he says the verse and then he explains the verse. One chapter for each verse. Okay. In the next verse, the author further explains why Krishna assumed the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then here's another aspect that's there. Just the introduction of the whole thing. As Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami gives the order of the verses, if they're understood, that also can be used as a template for a presentation of Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. Like that. In the next verse, the author further explains why Krishna assumed the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna desired to know the glory of Radharani's love, of Radha's love. Quote, "Why is she so much in love with me?" Krishna asked. "What is my special qualification that attracts her so? And what is the actual way in which she loves me?" Right? These three are the reason he comes. So this is then the internal reasons. Right? And so these three, then they make up the aspect of how you say? What is my special qualification that attracts her so? That will bring up the Madan Mohan aspect. That will bring up the Sampratan mission. Right? Why is she so much in love with me? Then that will bring up the aspect of Gopinath and that prema and tasting of, you know, so then Namaruchi. Right? And what is the actual way in which she loves me? Right? So that'll be then the activities in which she performs. That'll be the association of the Vaishnavas and the whole culture that's there in the Vaishnava community. Does that make sense? Yeah. It seems strange that Krishna, as the Supreme, should be attracted by anyone's love. A man searches after the love of a woman because he is imperfect. He lacks something. The love of a woman, that potency and pleasure, is absent in man, and therefore a man wants a woman. But this is not the case with Krishna, who is full in himself. Thus Krishna expressed surprise. Why am I attracted by Radharani? And when Radharani feels my love, what is she actually feeling? To taste the essence of that loving exchange, Krishna made his appearance in the same way that the moon appears on the horizon of the sea. Just as the moon is produced by the churning of the sea, by the churning of spiritual loving affairs, the moon of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. Indeed, Lord Chaitanya's complexion was golden, just like the luster of the moon. Although this is figurative language, it conveys the meaning behind the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The full significance of his appearance will be explained in later chapters. After offering respects to Lord Chaitanya, Krishna's Kaviraj begins offering them to Lord Nityananda in the seventh verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The author explains, so these first chapters will be about Lord Chaitanya, right? Then the next will be about Nityananda, then Advaita.
From the fifth chapter onwards.
Okay. Okay, after offering respects to Lord Chaitanya, Krishna's Kaviraj begins offering them to Lord Nityananda in the seventh verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The author explains that Lord Nityananda is Balaram, who is the origin of Mahavishnu. Krishna's first expansion is Balaram, a portion of whom is manifested as Sankarsana, who then expands as Prajumna. In this way, so many expansions take place. Although there are many expansions, Lord Sri Krishna is the origin, as confirmed in the Brahma Samhita. He is like the original candle, from which many thousands and millions of candles are lit. Although any number of candles can be lit, the original candle still retains its identity as the origin. In this way, Krishna expands himself into so many forms, and all these expansions are called Vishnu Tattva. Krishna is a large light, and we are small lights, But all are expansions of Krishna. So everything is expansions of Krishna. It's just a matter of jivas, they're small. Like that. While Krishna's unlimited. So all the Vishnu, they're all unlimited. But at the same time, as the qualities they'll manifest will be very specific for the... Just like Sankarsha, Prajumna, Anirudha, and Vasudeva, all four of them have all the qualities. But the point is then, what's the need to manifest in four? Because of the qualities that are there, you manifest in a way that it gives a particular flavor. So Sankarshan will manifest a particular aspect, Prajumna, a particular Vasudeva, and Anirudha. Then you have that interaction like that. Then it has that completeness. But it can also be done by one person, but when you're interacting with others, that's when you appreciate the exchange. That's when the different qualities and moods are appreciated. So,
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.